This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
And we're back in the room. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. The phone lines are open. The mission is simple. Bring me your mysteries and I will bring you solutions. Or rather, you will bring me solutions and I will be like the middleman, if you like. Who, why, what, where, when, whither, even the occasional wherefore. Something bubbling away in the back of your brain that you know must have an answer, but you don't know what the answer is. Ring in, ask it. Somebody else listening will know and we will put you together and create radio harmony, radio magic. And of course, recently there has been an added dimension to the unalloyed joys of Mystery Hour, and that added dimension is your opportunity to win your own Mystery Hour board game, a rather brilliant board game. And I can say that because I didn't make it or devise it. It's been put together by much cleverer people than me over at Big Sky Games, and you can win your own Mystery Hour board game by being my favourite contributor of the day. The full terms and conditions are at lbc.co.uk. You have to say that in a really quick voice. It's a rule of radio. The full terms and conditions are at lbc.co.uk. It's as quick as you can do it. The terms and conditions apply at lbc.co.uk. Shall we just start? I've got that mood as over. I put some nuts in my smoothie this morning again. Did I tell you this? I don't know whether it's affecting my energy levels. Okay, a little bit bouncier than usual. Let's start with Jenna, who's in Perth. Jenna, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Is there an international language between air traffic controllers and pilots?
Ooh, there must be, mustn't there?
You would think so, but I don't know, so that's why I'm phoning you.
So if you're flying your, I don't know, your German plane into Abu Dhabi, what language will the control tower speak to the cockpit? French or English, you'd think, wouldn't you? English.
Yeah, you would think, but then if there's pilots and air traffic controllers that are solely based around Asia, etc., would that apply?
So flying from Jakarta to Abu Dhabi, in a Malaysian airlines plane, what would I can't believe we've never had that before. Which means, Jenna, we probably have. I've just forgotten. But why do you want to know? What made you think about it? Have you just got back from your holidays?
Yeah, we went on a family holiday, first time in a long time, and the flight happened to come from, I think it was Amsterdam or somewhere, and yes. It got me thinking.
I like it. We shall find out for you, because there will be plenty of pilots and airport staff listening. Thank you, Jenna. Marion is in High Wycombe. Marion, question or answer?
A question.
Carry on.
Why is cubed pancetta located in the cooked section of a supermarket with the hams and chickens, but you have to cook it before using it?
Well, this is very niche.
Yeah, I use it a lot.
Do you, what, for carbonara, is it?
Yeah, carbonara, all sorts of things. I really like it, but I have only ever found it.
Well, how many different supermarkets?
Bacon section. Yeah. No, it could be Sainsbury's, Tesco, Waitrose, anywhere. It always is in the cook section, and it always says cook before using, but it is only ever located in the hams and cook section.
Well, I can tell you that in my local Morrison's, it's with the bacon.
Well, then maybe I should go there for it.
Well, you don't. I mean, it's not a problem, is it? It's not. I mean, you can eat it raw. I mean, you can have thin pancetta. No, well, you wouldn't really, would you?
The sliced pancetta is there, and it's fine. But the cubes.
The little cubes, the lardons. Lardons.
The lardons.
The lardons.
They always say cook before using, but they're still found.
Well, probably supply. I don't know. I imagine that the staff in, and maybe it's different in different parts of the country, but possibly the staff in High Wycombe think that because it comes in the same crate, it comes from the same suppliers as the hams, because it's cured, isn't it? It's coming from the ham people rather than the bacon people, so they just put it on the shelves with
With
the hams and the... All right, I mean, it's a rare question, that, isn't it? Why is the pancetta... Oh, this is the most middle-class question we've ever had on Mystery Hour. Why is the pancetta always in the cooked... always in the cooked section of... I shall find out for you, or not, as the case may be. I don't think that one's a stone-cold guarantee. 12:11 is the time. The language of international air travel. If the planes and control towers and cockpits are talking to each other, do they always talk in the same language? And what is that language? And why is the pancetta always in the cooked section in supermarkets? Eric's in Deptford. Eric, question or answer?
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I was just wondering, do we think the world gets heavier or lighter or possibly stays the same every day?
What inspired this thought? What made you think of this? Just so I get a better handle on what you're asking.
I'll be honest, I have no idea.
No.
But I think when I think of things like, say, like trees, you know, they obviously start off like as little seeds and tiny, and
yeah,
then they'll grow to be quite big, and then obviously that's really heavy. But then at the same time, you've got like natural resources being like turned into things that become heavier. But then you've got planes that take off, so now there's no that weight off the plane.
Also, someone might set fire to a tree.
Yeah, exactly. And then it turns into ash.
All matter exists. All matter that will ever exist currently exists. It just, all you have is a constant, transfer of matter. But when you say how much does the world weigh, what are you weighing?
Well, I suppose everything.
The atmosphere as well as the Earth, or just the globe, just the...
Probably just the globe, because I say, if you take all the planes off the Earth, then that weight's now not on the Earth, is it?
No.
And just like if... Yeah.
And now I feel, having been to Professor Brian Cox's superb show at the Royal Opera House last night, I feel I should actually have been able to answer this question. But oddly, he didn't address this year. Did he?
Yeah.
I shall try and find out for you. Does the world get heavier or lighter, ever?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, you're on. Have you been?
Awesome.
Have you been? Have you been? What have you been? Have you been? We late night, was it? We been?
Yeah. No?
Our brains have been to these places, but I'm just wondering why. Dan's in Halston in Norfolk. Dan, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Dan.
To the aviation language question.
Marvellous, go on.
It is English.
Yes, I thought it might be.
It's any pilot or air traffic controller needs to be able to speak English to a certain level so they can all speak to each other in a common language.
Anywhere in the world, even sworn enemies of Britain.
Well, I'm not entirely sure about North Korea.
No, I don't know if they have any
allies.
But that is the rule.
And
how fluent do you have to be? Pretty fluent, I imagine.
Pretty fluent, yeah. You need to be able to have a good conversation with the person at the other end of the line and
cope with unexpected stuff.
Understand each other. Yeah,
qualifications?
Absolutely. I interviewed and went for the test day to become an air traffic controller many years ago.
But you didn't follow through on it, or they didn't like the cut of your jib?
I got a letter saying you got very, very close, we invite you to reapply, but I went off and did something else and never got around to reapply.
Blimey. And your English was up to sniff?
I think that bit was okay.
Right, of
course. He was mostly playing around with, hey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming in. Quick, stop! Nick's in Haverhill. It's from Norfolk to Suffolk. Nick's in Haverhill. Nick, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
I was watching a TV. I know you're up against the clock. I'll be quick. I was watching.
That's ridiculous. The listeners are now more professional than the bloody presenter. I'm going to come to you after the junction. Is that all right?
Sure.
Did they tell you I was up against the clock, or did you work it out for yourself?
I worked it out for myself.
Oh, that's even worse. Honestly, it's a miracle.
If any jobs going?
Well, I tell you what, you're way ahead. I haven't even said the time yet. It's 12:15. From day one, it's always been the people who make Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Atlantic. They are proud to fly their customers, and their people always go the extra mile. They and their customers are a dazzling collection of individuals who march to their own drumbeat and fly their own path. Their people are the beating heart of the business, the soul of their bright red brand. Travel is one of life's great joys, but only if everybody can be themselves. Changing the rules around wearing makeup and not showing your tattoos, making them work for today. Whatever works best for you. We're on board. Virgin Atlantic. See the world differently.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:16. Back to Nick in Haverhill, who very courageously intervened to make sure that we went to that last junction on time, which is amazing. I should have got you to do the time check as well, Nick. Where were we? Question or answer?
You're welcome. It was a question. And now we've got a bit longer. I've been listening to you for a few years, and you've really changed the way I think and view politics in particular. So I just want to thank you for opening my mind.
Well, a beautiful thing to say. Thank you, mate. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're very welcome. I was watching on a light. I was watching an advert the other day. It cropped up. I think it was for one of the insurance companies or something about savings. And there was this guy, and he ran off into his castle room, and he was trying to hide his treasure from the ensuing soldiers that were running after him.
Yeah.
And a little pig walked in. And the guy decided to stuff all his treasures and goods and gems inside a pig.
Is this a fever dream or an advert? A real pig?
I think, no, it was like a hairy little brown hog. It wasn't a traditional pink-looking, very medieval.
Where are we going with this, then?
Hog. Oh, I just wanted to know the origin of saving in a piggy bank.
Why it's a pig. I was hoping you were going to say that, Nick, because I know the answer to this. I think it's in the board game, actually.
Oh, well, I hope to find that out for myself.
Very nicely played. So it is, oddly, the pig, the word pig, which wasn't spelt P-I-G, had a Y in it and possibly more than one G, is just a type of clay from which a pot would be made. And into said pot, ancient peasants would put their coins. And it just became a play over the years that potters, given that it was called pig, would then make make the pot look like a pig. So pig began as a word for clay, a particular type of clay, a cheap clay, I guess, and then it became and then it became shaped like a pig, just as a marketing wheeze, I suppose, more than anything else. And that is the answer, and I know that because it's come up.
Didn't do bad at it.
You what?
Nat West didn't do bad at it.
No, they didn't. You're my age, are you? I remember that advert. Give us a positive. You get the wall chart. Get the piggy wall chart. And that is, I mean, qualifications. It's in the Mystery Hour. It's either in the Mystery Hour ball game or it's come up on Mystery Hour before. And astonishingly, I've actually managed to remember the answer. So I'll take my first round of applause of the day.
Well played.
No, thank you, Nick. Do you want to do a quick time check, mate, or are you busy?
No, we're ahead of schedule.
Linda is in Cultibraggan in Scotland. Question or answer, Linda?
Oh, hi, James. How are you going?
Very well.
Good. It's a question.
Yes.
Just wondering why we have eyelids so we can close our eyes without having to put anything over them.
Correct.
But why don't we have nose lids or ear lids? Because there would be times, and you would think that evolutionary-wise...
No, you wouldn't.
You would think that maybe we'd have evolved to be able to spontaneously close our ears or nose.
Guy, would you wonder what would be the benefit of that?
Well, if you're in a sandstorm thing and your hands are full, you can't hold your nose, you can't cover your ears, and yet you're in danger of being...
Your hands are full.
Why can we close our eyes then?
Listen, bearing in mind this is a family programme and it's the school holidays, so there'll be children listening. But the principle of evolution is reproductive advantage, as you know. So evolutionary mutations or mutations in our DNA that provide us with a reproductive advantage, i.e. we are more likely to procreate as a consequence of that mutation. What is it, do you think, about people caught in sandstorms with their hands full who had somehow developed a mutation that allowed them to close their ears that would prompt them to have more children than everybody else stuck in the same sandstorm with their hands full, Linda?
Well, okay. Well, if I put it another way, I've got a partner who's
steady.
Enthusiastically flatulent.
To what?
Enthusiastically flatulent.
Okay, that's all right, yes.
And being able to spontaneously close my nose.
Yeah, but it's not going to give you a reproductive advantage, is it?
Well, it might.
Well, then we'll find out because I know long COVID is unlikely to be passed on from from parent to child. But the short answer is that, you know, your eye is a very sensitive and delicate organ. And if you lost the ability to see, then you'd be at a huge evolutionary disadvantage. So therefore, something that covers your eye and minimises the likelihood of your eyesight being compromised is an epic evolutionary advantage. So that's going to be passed on immediately and very quickly. Your ears and your ears and your nose are not highly sensitive.
I think
if I poke you in the ear, really you can. If I poke you in the ear, you can still hear.
Yeah, if you poke me in one eye, I can still see.
Yeah, but now you're just being silly, I think. You're being pedantic. Because you're not going to just have one eyelid, are you? Both eyes are protected equally because they're both as important as each other. If I poke you in the nose, you can still smell.
Not if you break my nose completely.
So there is no evolution. Yeah, if I break your nose completely, it doesn't matter whether it's got a lid on it or not, does it?
Well
so the answer is...
I'm talking about
going definitive. The answer is there is absolutely no evolutionary advantage to having ear lids or nose lids. Round of applause for me, please, Keith. Thank you, Linda. Thank you for playing. No, carry on. Thank you. Very nicely played. Ear lids. Round of applause for James. Linda goes on the list. Paul's in Derby. Paul, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Paul.
I say, okay, so it's the air traffic control language.
Oh, yes.
So your previous caller wasn't... If he wasn't quite correct. Oh. English is the universal language on the airwaves. But actually, if you're flying an aircraft that is registered in the country that you're flying in or over, you can talk in your language. So if you're an Air France pilot flying over France or on the ground at Charles de Gaulle, you can talk French to the air traffic control.
So if you've got like a match-up, French plane, French airport, German plane, German airport, then you can do it. But so the default is English, but the exception is, I mean, inevitable. I mean, it makes perfect sense because you're going to have a much greater facility. However fluent your English is, you're probably going to speak your native language better.
Absolutely, and they do. And it does cause a little bit of confusion sometimes on the ground when there's two languages being spoken.
Yes.
And you're trying to work out what's going off. But that is the answer.
I like that. Qualifications?
I'm a captain for long-haul airline.
Very nicely
done. World's favourite airline.
Oh, the world's favourite airline. Well, that narrows it down a bit. Is it still? Do you still claim that? Oh, it doesn't matter. Let's give a round of applause for Paul.
Probably best not go into that.
Lovely stuff. Thank God they didn't put those flags on the back of the plane all those years ago. Thanks to Maggie. That you probably had to be here for the first hour of the programme to appreciate that intervention. Thank you, Paul. Great stuff. Airports, Paul. That's a nice question. Jenny will be happy with that. James is in Southampton. James, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, James.
I used to work in retail a while ago. And obviously part of the job there is to challenge people for their age if they looked young enough to buy alcohol, cigarettes, whatever.
Is it?
But we also had an age restriction check on non-alcoholic beer. Mm. And I'm like, we never got explained why that was the case. So
how long ago was this? Reminded me of Woke Watch. We've got a Woke Watch. Can you get me the Woke Watch about Heineken beer? Can you find it? It was in the Sun yesterday. Thank you very much. Sorry, did that happen?
I mean, I don't mind showing my idea to buy my non-alcoholic beer.
Why do you require? Was it in all shops? I mean, are you sure you have to show ID? Non-alcoholic beer is rarely 0.0%, you know.
Yeah, I know there is. In some of them there are, but there is a minuscule content of alcohol. That could be something to do with it. But in most retailers I've been to and tried to buy it, I have to either they'll come and clear the prompt at the self-checkout, or I'd have to show my ID anymore. Thankfully, that says a lot more about my age.
I mean, it might just be that it makes life easier because you're on the till. You know what it's like. You're busy. You're just anything that's got beer on it. You need to show ID so that you don't have to waste 5 minutes looking for the volume on it.
I was trying to work out. Is there an age restriction on it? Or is it just a trading standards kind of thing?
Not even trading standards, just ease of speed and efficiency at the tills. We'll find out. Someone will know. David's already been in touch to say he's right. Sainsbury's still does this. I don't think I've ever bought non-alcohol beer in my life, James. So I'm not right.
You should really give it. It's changed. It's changed my alcohol intake massively. You should give it a go, and some of them are really good.
I may do that at some unspecified point in the future. I like that. Why do they check the age of people buying non-alcohol beer? What else are we looking for? We've done the ear lids. That's a brilliant answer. We've done the piggy bank. I'm on form today, Keith. I'm knocking them out of the park. We've got pancetta, and we've got Eric's question. Eric's question about whether or not the world ever gets heavier or lighter, man, or just stays the same. Del's in Basingstoke. Del, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Del.
I'm a taxi driver in Basingstoke. I've been driving around for years, and I still can't work this out.
Still can't find a passenger.
Still can't find a passenger. No, why are closes called closes, streets called streets, roads called roads, ways called ways, avenues, lanes, drives, terraces, etc.? I can't work out why they're called what they are.
Well, why it's
and if there's
different.
Any particular reason. yeah, what makes a close a close? What makes a street a street? What makes a road a road? So obviously there's an old, maybe an olden day one, maybe there's a reason why, but yeah. There's new estates going up and they just put them a lane or they put them a avenue or a way or a terrace, and I'm wondering why that is and if there's any particular reason.
Councils do it, don't they? Just variety, I suppose. You can't, and it gives you a little bit more options because you could have an Acacia Road, an Acacia Avenue, an Acacia Close, so it gives you a little...
Somebody just is there in the council planning office says, oh, my go, I'm going to call this one an avenue,
I don't think you're far off it, but I'm obviously not going to claim that is the correct answer. But, I mean, it's a bit Sherlock Holmesy as well, once you've eliminated the impossible. What else could it be?
Yeah, because, you know, I drive down somewhere, I'm thinking, right, this is a street, so there must be a reason why this is a street. And then you go down another one, and it's a close, and it's exactly the same. And you think, I thought maybe it might be one had a shop on it or something, or one had a closed, you know, one way in, one
way out. There'll be some possible distinctions on that. Close being the most obvious is probably a crescent, isn't it, or something like that.
Well, a crescent is the only one I've worked out because of the shape of it. But
I think close is a dead ends, aren't they? If it's a closed,
possibly.
Yeah. But roads possibly. And streets, I wouldn't know the difference. Lanes are smaller. We'll find out. And we want it from the council point of view, don't we? From the people that name the actual thoroughfares.
And then I can retire.
You and me both. I like that. And avenues are lined by trees. Avenues traditionally lined by trees, but that doesn't really answer
question. Maybe. Just want to say a big thanks as well. A huge fan of the show.
So cheers, Della.
Keep going. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, mate. I appreciate that. It's just coming up to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've heard from our programme's favourite grocer, Andreas of Chelsea, who can confirm that pancetta is kept with the cold cuts at his emporium on the perfectly reasonable grounds, as it's the only uncooked Italian item that we do. But that's not going to apply to supermarkets, is it? Because, Italian. Could it be the fact that it's Italian that sees it put with the Parma ham and the prosciutto and things like that? So it's your Italian hams, cooked and uncooked, that are all together. I don't know. Possibly the most middle-class question we've ever had on the programme. Although not necessarily. I'm sure there has been competition over the years. Time now for the news headlines with Tim Humphrey. That is the sound of a heart stopping. And hearts can stop when you least expect it. While getting ready for the school run, playing sport, even in the middle of a podcast. You see, heart muscle diseases can be inherited across generations. Faulty genes can affect the young and seemingly fit. Millions of people live with that fear every day. But imagine if there was a cure. The good news is that the British Heart Foundation are funding groundbreaking research to turn this fear into hope. They're awarding a grant of £30 million to CureHeart, a global team of the brightest researchers with one shared vision: finding a game-changing cure to stop these diseases from stopping hearts. So please, show your support and search CureHeart to find out how the British Heart Foundation are turning science fiction into reality.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:32 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've done the airports. Pancetta. Why is the pancetta with the hams and not with the bacons, the uncooked pancetta? Does the world get heavier or lighter ever? And what's the story with avenues, closes, streets, roads? How is it decided what's going to be what? And why do you have to show your ID when you're buying non-alcoholic beer? I quite like that one, the non-alcoholic, because would anybody under 18 ever try to buy non-alcoholic beer? It would be a very odd way to pass your time as an under 18-year-old. Paul's in Southwark. Paul, question or answer?
I have a question.
Yes.
Why do people feel tranquil when we arrive and look at bodies of water?
I mean, I presume it doesn't apply to everybody. It applies to me, but...
Yeah, and it applies to me. I mean, I don't know whether it's because we're always with someone older who feels that way and then we just get influenced by that and it's passed on, or if it's because something we're looking at.
I think I might know.
Okay.
You sound a bit sceptical.
Disappointed.
Yeah. Well, at least you're on it. Why?
Because I want to go on the board. I want to get it answered
but
by.
What, by I mean, it's an incredible honour to be answered by me, the inventor and instigator of Mystery Hour.
It's very true.
Whose picture do you think's on the board games box? I tell you why I think I know this. Because during lockdown, I really noticed how much I missed Big Skies. And funnily enough, the company that makes the Mystery Hour board game is called Big Sky Games, but that's just a coincidence. And so I looked it up. And it makes sense. The more you can see of the horizon, the more relaxed your lizard brain will be because you know that there's no threats incoming.
Okay.
So if you are beside a huge body of water, that's a huge weight off you, especially if it's empty, and that's a huge weight off your subconscious. Because although you might need to check over your shoulder to make sure no one's creeping up on you with a big club, the threat is clearly not there. So I bet that's linked to it. That and then there's the sound of running water, and there's probably something linked to the womb. But I bet it's to do with the fact that you can see such a wide expanse of the horizon, and there is no threat on it anywhere.
Okay, because I was thinking
you're going to sound a bit more bloody excited than that, Paul.
Well, because I mean, I suppose looking it up is arguably a piece. It is proof, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, okay. I was thinking, was it something to do with, like, white noise, the way that you kind of just zone out in the same way, maybe. But
I wouldn't have thought so. I don't think I can give myself a round of applause for that. But I'm not going to lie to you, mate. I thought you would enjoy the practice of genuinely wrestling with an important question together live on the radio. I thought you'd find it a bit more enjoyable than you did.
I'm really enjoying it. The fact I'm even speaking to you is up there, to be honest.
Honestly, it's too late now, Paul. Why do we find bodies over so rubbish question? It's the worst question. Why do we find bodies of water tranquil? 0345 6060 973. I've got one for you. This is all down to James's question about non-alcoholic beer, but you're not going to believe what is going to feature in today's Woke Watch. Lager fans blast new Heineken tipple aimed at lighter drinking Gen Z Brits. Heineken's new woke lager, aimed at lightweight millennial drinkers, has been slammed by customers who want a return to tradition. This is in the Sun newspaper yesterday, which is effectively, I don't know what, I mean, what? Is there a prize for getting the word woke into a story, regardless of whether it has any place there or not? So Heineken, the Dutch lager giant, has launched a new 4% alcohol by volume tipple designed to suit lighter drinking Generation Z Brits. Heineken Silver, there was another one, wasn't there? There was a lighter Heineken out years ago as well. I can't remember. So anyway, it uses an idea to create a significantly less bitter taste than the brand. So they've made a lager that's a bit weaker than their normal lager, 4% as opposed to 5%. So that, you know, you can drink it more, probably, than you would the 5% lager without falling over. Apparently, this is woke. Now listen to the people they've lined up to attack it. By the way, they're not taking away the 5% one. There's absolutely no threat to your normal lager. And, you know, lager aficionados may perhaps aficionize it. Aficionados or aficionados? Lager fans may argue that Heineken is not really a brew for a connoisseur, but I don't want to go down that particular road. Here's one. Listen to this. Thomas Simpson, 44, of Bexley in southeast London, said, "I fear this is the future of beer now. Woke options aimed at Generation Z rather than traditional beer lovers who have been drinking it for years." Mate. Plumber Paul Rogers of Alstree and Derby said, "This is just woke madness. Beer should be traditional." So in our never-ending quest for things that are woke, or what does woke mean, now it means beer that is marginally less alcoholic than another beer. The one that is marginally less alcoholic than the other one is woke. And that concludes today's Woke Watch. God, it's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? Dan's in Brighton. Dan, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
Do babies get songs stuck in their head?
Go on, tell me more. Explain.
Well, I sing to my baby all the time.
Yeah.
Some really quite annoying tunes.
I'm sure they're lovely.
And I just wondered if she goes to bed with those song stuck in her head.
How would we ever find out?
Well, I don't know. That's another question, isn't it?
So she's beyond articulating herself at this moment.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And she doesn't...
She can say a couple of words, but not...
Oh, that's sweet. She doesn't sing back or hum back or anything like that.
No. Well, I don't know. She might be. She makes a lot of strange noises.
When you sing, I mean, would you be able to hazard a bet on what her favourites are? If you sing a certain song, do you get a certain smile or something like that?
Nelly does a poo-poo in a nappy. Nelly does a poo-poo in a diaper.
I didn't...
Nelly does a poo-poo in a nappy, so we have to give a bum a wiper.
Okay, stop now. That's lovely. Yes.
Thanks.
And she enjoys that one in particular, does she?
I guess so. I don't know. She can't talk.
She can't smile or anything yet.
Oh, she can smile, yeah.
But are there some songs... This is like pulling teeth, man. Are there some songs that make her smile more than other songs?
Not that I've noticed.
Right. So you're asking about earworms, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Not just songs that I sing. I mean, we listen to music all the time. So
I would imagine
if she knows those tunes and gets...
Yeah, I guess the question is, can babies frame stuff in their brain even before they can say it out loud? Because you can't get an earworm unless you can sing it. I wouldn't have thought. But I don't know. I shall find out for you. And you've got a lovely singing voice. Can babies get earworms? They're all here. Jasper's in South Croydon. Jasper, question. South Croydon. Question or answer?
It's an answer, Jake.
Carry on.
To the does the world get heavier or lighter?
Yeah, man.
And it kind of depends. Are we talking about everything that's on the world or everything that's under the atmosphere?
Everything that... No, just the Earth, not
just the
atmosphere. Yeah, I mean, I don't bloody know, do I? I didn't ask the question. Eric did, but he kept talking about aeroplanes taking off. So if we were going to include the atmosphere, then aeroplanes taking off wouldn't make any difference, would they? So it is just the Earth, the Earth, the confines of the Earth.
Then, yes, it does change. So the plane example, that's one example of how the Earth will get lighter when it takes off.
How do you know?
He also spoke about trees. How do you know?
Yeah.
Because... the plane has left the surface of the Earth. The plane has mass. So if it's left the surface, then the surface lays wet.
But there wouldn't be, like, gravitational pull wouldn't also be exerting pressure on scales if you had any big enough.
Well, no, because once they're off the surface of the scales would say zero, but gravity is still working on the plane. Gravity is still pulling it towards the Earth. So there's still the force of weight on the plane. So the world does change, but everything under the atmosphere doesn't change because you can't create mass, you can't destroy mass.
Yeah, that was the line I was reaching for and completely failing to pick up. You can't destroy mass, you can't create mass.
Yeah, there's lots of other examples of how the world will change, how heavy it is throughout the day. So he spoke about trees.
I have to warn you, before you carry on, I'm a very good friend now. I met him last week once, of Professor Brian Cox. So, you know, don't try and pull the wool over my eyes or anything like that.
Oh, I'm not going to. He is a wonderful, wonderful scientist.
Legend, isn't he?
And I'm very jealous you got to meet him.
Oh, great mates, great mates, big mates, showbiz chums. Carry on. Went to a show last night, went backstage. We didn't go backstage at all, actually. I took my daughter, but it was a really, really lovely time. Carry on. Give me some other examples.
Yeah, so he spoke about trees growing. Trees, when they grow, they get their mass from carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So, you know, you talk about trees being wonderful for global warming, it's because they take away the carbon dioxide. And then they do photosynthesis, which turns that gas that's in the air into glucose. So then that glucose that was carbon dioxide is now in the tree. So the tree is heavier. So then the world is heavier because it's got that mass from the atmosphere.
Oh, because it's turned gas into solid, basically.
Kind of. Yeah.
Qualifications?
I've just finished my first year as a science teacher.
How are you getting on?
I love it.
Oh,
it's
fantastic.
Best job in the world.
Oh, mate,
best
what an absolute joy. There's an index out today, I can't remember what it is, about the secrets to a good and happy life, and having a job that you love is very near the top of the list. So you and me, but go us, Jasper, go us.
Yeah, go us. Smashing it,
Round of applause for Jasper.
Thank you, James.
Lovely stuff, thank you. And Eric should be pleased with that answer as well, which makes me a bit embarrassed for taking the mickey out of it. Plus, Chance. Mary's in Enfield. Mary, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
I got married 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to know...
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I want to know...
You're still together?
We're doing well.
Carry on.
Right. So my voice changed before I knew I was going to cry. I went all high and squeaky before I cried. Mm. And I want to know what it is about our throats that happens that we go all, you know, only dogs can hear us. Because we think of ear, nose and throat. We don't think of eye, ear, nose and throat. And like I said, my voice changed even before the tears started. I knew I was going to cry because my voice was happy.
I'm so happy. I love you so much. Thank you.
All of that. So, yeah, that's my question. I don't understand what happens to our throats, why they constrict before a tear. If you were blubbing a lot, I could understand, okay, so there's a lot of water going on, a lot of bogey maybe, and it needs to shut down for that. But before it's even started, why is it?
Must have constricted or something. Your pipes must have constricted slightly or something like that. But I like that. Yeah. Why does your voice go up before you start crying or when you're about to start crying? Yeah.
And then you have to swallow it down and you have to go, okay, I'm all right. And then you can talk normally again. But it wasn't just me. I mean, obviously, you know, everybody had a bit of a blub.
Of course.
It happened.
Lovely stuff. So it was a big day. It was like, so everything went off swimmingly.
Yeah, it was lovely. We really had a good time.
Lovely.
Really good.
Lovely. Honeymoon yet? Or are you postponing it? Or are you back already?
No, we haven't had a honeymoon yet. There's issues, respite care issues and things like that. So once all that's sorted, then yes.
You'll enjoy it all the more when it comes around, won't you? Mary, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and congratulations to you both, from me and everyone on the team.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. 12:45 is the time. A lot of responses to this week, to today's Woke Watch. Quite a few people pointing out. Rob at the front of the queue. Heineken used to be 3.4%, then they ditched it for the 5% export some years ago. My mum was gutted when they got rid of it, as it was her favourite. She'll be thrilled at the new 4% one. Carlsberg is 3.8% and always has been. John Hall says probably the wokest lager in the world. If they'd called it a session ale, anyone that knows anything about beer will see the rising popularity of session ales, which are quite low in alcoholic content, so that you can have an extremely long session. So the Sun's attempt to turn it into a story about being woke is ridiculous. When Whitbread brewed Heineken back in the day, the 1980s, it was only 3.6%, especially for the British market. This is ridiculous. What a silly story. And Ben says, wait until they find out about Shandy. Find out about Shandy, their little heads will explode. And Bex Via with a V. That was about 3.4, I think. So, I mean, this is such a stupid story. Every Woke Watch story is stupid, but here's a particularly stupid one. And finally, David says, if you remember your younger days drinking at the Old Wagon and Horses in Bewdley, for me, Bewdley was always about the pack horse or the black boy. Never really drank in the Old Wagon and Horses. All of the lager there was served at around 3.5% to 4%. Only very recently, i.e. 10 years ago, they've gone for a 5%. So why this is such a woke travesty, I do not know. You and me both, David. You and me both.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. We covered interest rates at the top of the hour, but the rest of the Bank of England's predictions make, if anything, for even grimmer reading. So we'll probably be having a look at some of those issues today, and indeed my colleagues throughout the day will be doing so. Back to Mystery Hour for now. A few questions still need answers. Can babies get earworms? I'd be surprised if that one gets an answer. Why do bodies of water make us feel tranquil? I think I've done that. But if you're qualified, then you can get on the board. Why does our voice go up in pitch when we are about to start crying? And how do thoroughfares get their name? Avenues, roads, streets. Some of them you can work out, but some of them seem to be identical in all but name. And why do you have to show ID to buy non-alcoholic beer? We've done almost all of the others, but if you know why pancetta is put with the hams rather than the bacon in supermarkets, then you can get yourself a round of applause as well. Andy is in Hull. Andy, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Andy.
So it's the answer about the street's naming process.
Do you speak German by any chance?
Do I speak German? Only a small amount.
What's the German word for four?
For four?
Yeah.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier.
Vier. That's why it's Bex Vier. It literally means four.
Bex Vier.
So Bex have had a beer called Four for years, and now Heineken have introduced one, and the Sun have gone nuts and called it woke. Bex Vier means Bex Four. 4%.
James, you should only be drinking German and Belgian beer anyway. It's far better.
Okay, I'm quite partial to Beaver Town, actually. I know it's owned by a big brewery, but I quite like a Beaver Town craft or a Sierra Nevada. Anyway, we digress. I'm probably breaking all sorts of rules. Don't drink alcohol to excess. And kids, don't go near it. Where were we? Streets, Andy. Thank you. Can't believe you spoke enough German to get me over the line there. Thank you, mate.
It's okay. I've speak to a lot of German people. So the street naming process actually goes back to 1847, which is to do with the Town Improvement Clause Act.
Yes.
And an updated version of the Public Health Act, which was done in 1907.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning that local authorities are legally bound to name properties and streets.
Yeah.
Now, in the good old days, what would happen is people would look at a location and think, okay, I'm going to give it this name based on what I see.
Mm.
So you'll see there's a number of streets around the country for all different types of names. There's one in where I live in Hull called the Land of Green Ginger. That's the name of the street. It's not a street, a crescent or anything like that.
Oh, how lovely.
However, in recent times, the street name and numbering process has introduced a number of... there's about 14 really high-level guidelines that says if you're going to name a street and a location, including a house numbers, you have to meet a set number of criteria, and they have to be done in a certain way to stop misinterpretation, stop people, local authorities giving streets named after famous living people.
Yeah.
So that you don't have people like, there was one in Leeds, I believe, named after Jimmy Savile, and so on and so forth.
Have you seen that story about the football stand?
I
was going to do this as a hook and tease today, but I completely forgot. You've just reminded me. I'll do it now.
So
there's a non-league football club. It's Southend United are in the National League, and they secured some sponsorship from Gilbert and Rose, a local estate agency. Do you want to tell people what went wrong?
They named it after a convicted criminal.
By accident, because it's the West Stand. It's the West Stand is sponsored by Gilbert and Rose, so it's become the Gilbert and Rose West Stand, which is not great, is it, really? So it just goes to show why you need these guidelines, Andy. You've got to be very careful about naming things.
And there is, and that's also why you've also got to be careful. You shouldn't be calling streets after, like, canal, because people can graffiti. So you'll notice that in the good old days that happened, but in newer days...
With my post-match analysis of Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss's debate popped up on some people's car radios in a very embarrassing way.
and it was funny.
It was. So, road and street then is just pretty much they might be looking at how many roads they've got already or how many streets they've got. So.
And what they'll do is they'll look at a certain area and they'll say, okay, we already have a high street here or we already have a Sunset Boulevard or whatever.
Yes.
And what they try to do with the street name and numbering officers is they try to, when there's a new housing development going up, they try to have like some type of theme that goes on around those streets. So you'll start seeing names very similar, maybe to a certain part of the country. Or
there's one in Kidderminster that's all English writers. You've got like Milton and Wordsworth and Bronte. It's lovely. Yeah. What are your qualifications then?
So I worked in local authorities for 17 years, looking after streets, name and numbering and location intelligence. And now I'm a director of a large IT company that I go around the world speaking to local authorities and members of the public speaking about location intelligence.
I mean, how many people are in your line of work then? How many people have segued from local authority to international consultant on this issue?
There's many, many people. But I've actually answered a question on your show before about 10 Downing Street and the street naming numbering process around that.
You're another one who loves his work, aren't you?
I have my dream job.
That's fantastic.
I honestly have my dream
job. I'm gonna give you a Ray Liotta because I mean that is incredible that you. I mean, it's great that you listen anyway, but the fact that you are so qualified to answer this question is just superb.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Oh, the late great.
You've made my day.
Well, you've made mine as well. That was lovely. I suspect I could talk to you for hours over a 4% beer and find out more about the world of street. I don't know why I find it fascinating. It's something to do with humanity imposing order on chaos. It's why I love looking at bridges. Humanity managing to put order on nature and chaos. Lovely stuff from Andy. Jasper, I hope you're still listening in South Croydon. Joanna's just texted to say, James, I'm pretty sure that Jasper, the science teacher, teaches my daughters. They absolutely love him. He's excellent. Spreading the love today. today on Mystery Hour. Jules is in Upton upon Severn, not that far from Bewdley, coincidentally enough. Jules, what would you like to say?
Yeah, a bit downstream.
Indeedy. You know.
So, let me try and answer the middle class conundrum.
Please.
So, pancetta. So, basically, there are a couple of answers or a couple of reasons. So, the first one is it comes under the category of charcuterie. So when you go into a supermarket, the buyers, by and large, you'll have someone who's responsible for sausage and bacon as a category.
Yeah.
And then you'll have somebody responsible for cured meats and all that kind of stuff.
That's what I said. That's what I thought it would be, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So where you see it next to bacon,
yeah,
for example, that's just a decision in a store that they would have taken to put it there, and obviously next to the bacon lardons. Mm. And what have you. Anyway, so that's the first answer. And the second one is that the product itself is cured. So if you look at Italian charcuterie, particularly pancetta, it's all cured. It's all raw, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
The only cooked products are mortadella and prosciutto cotto, so the ham, you know. Cooked ham.
I like a bit of mortadella.
You see, I love it too, but a lot of people think it's spam. But,
I was about to say it looks like spam, but it's nothing apart from, it doesn't taste anything like spam. It just reminds you of the palate maybe of that texture from childhood, but it's delicious, really
if you
delicious.
Go to Bologna,
melts in your mouth, doesn't it? Melts on your tongue.
Amazing.
Almost,
if you really go to Bologna, you will think you've died and gone to heaven.
I'm going
to
take you up on that.
Yeah. But that's the reason.
Brilliant.
That pancetta is there. And
so
actually,
it's a cured Italian meat, so it goes with all the other cured Italian meats.
Yeah,
pretty straightforward.
In the cubes,
yep.
It's to do with the amount of drying, because there are different types of pancetta. So in Italy, generally speaking, you would eat it out of the pack.
Yeah.
So you have what we have here in the UK is a thing called pancetta stesa. It's essentially belly pork. If you
like, you know your stuff. Qualifications?
Amongst other things, I work for a very large manufacturer of Italian charcuterie, and we specialise in pancetta.
Fantastic. Round of applause for Jules. Do you get to take your work home with you?
Frequently.
Yeah, I quite fancy that.
And big cheers.
Top man. Grazie mille. Can I squeeze in one more, or should we crack on? Yeah, well, quickly. Scott's in Rothwell. Scott, question or answer?
Answer, mate.
Carry on.
Yeah, it's about the why do you need ID to buy non-alcoholic alcohol?
Yes.
Essentially, it's about not promoting alcoholic drinks to children.
Yeah.
It's very dry reason, I'm afraid.
No,
because
it's a good
non-alcoholic
one.
Beer is still promoted in the alcohol aisles in stores.
Yeah.
What they don't want to do is encourage children into that aisle.
Get out of town. Is it illegal to sell it to minors?
For stores to sell it to minors, yes, it is.
Is it
within
really?
A store?
Because you are promoting alcohol to minors.
Yeah, in a licensed premises such as a pub, children can drink beer under 0.5% because it's not classed as
God,
beer.
God, that's woke.
Only inside. I know.
That's
don't
about.
Set them off.
Good God, how
don't
woke can
off.
Beer get, man? Leave our beer alone, you woke warriors. Qualifications.
Stop putting fruit in beer.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Although there's one with grapefruit that's quite nice. Anyway, we digress. Qualifications.
We 20 years of licensee.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Scott. Cracking mystery out of that. And very difficult decision. So I'm going to do it entirely on emotion. And I'm going to give the board game to Mary this week because she just got married. And she didn't get an answer to her question. But James on the... I mean, anyone could have. Linda with her ear lids. Loads of contenders there. So I'm just literally giving it to I'll tell you what, if anyone else who asked or answered a question actually got married more recently than 2 weeks ago, they're going to feel robbed. But it's too late now. There will be no stewards inquiry. Congratulations to Mary. That's it from me for another day. We'll be doing it again tomorrow morning from 10. Time for Sheila Fogarty.